and welcome to Cangria, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
And we are back for this week's show. Last week, a lot of lesbian music to appease the ears of our listeners. I had a great time. I was away for just over a week. Went to Regina, the town that rhymes with Regina. We went to Winnipeg. So we got to see the folks over at CJTR FM, where you may be hearing the show on Fridays at 11.
Did you see the Painted Badlands? Or were you not close enough to it?
No. We flew over what looked like tiles on the floor. It was just all the farms, straight lines.
Oh, yeah, for sure, yeah. It's a lot of people forget that Canada does have at least the northern tip of a desert poking up into Alberta. And it's not far from Regina either, or Regina, as 2 weeks ago I insisted on calling it.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So I want to apologize for our listeners. We went out last night to what was ostensibly a 90s night. I don't know if the DJ was alive in the 90s, but I was not impressed.
Well, he looked like he was alive during the 90s. I don't know if he was, because there were a few people in the crowd who looked of the age where they remembered the stuff when they came out, and a lot of those people looked bored.
Yeah, no, it wasn't good. But yeah, we are a little under the weather today as a result of that.
Yeah. Did I ever tell you? I'm gonna shine some light on some stuff and share a story. Did I ever tell you about the first time I got hungover? It's a short story.
Okay.
So this is when I was living in Hong Kong, and it was towards the end of the time there, and went out with my friends to the mid-levels. Mid-levels just being a part of Central in Hong Kong. And came back, went to bed, whatever. Woke up the next morning, and I felt amazing. I actually felt really good. I for the amount that I drank, I was actually quite alarmed by how good I felt. And then I sat up, and then the world went, woo! And then I realized two things. First of all, I had the spins real bad. And the second was that I wasn't hungover, because I was still drunk. And when you're still drunk and you got the spins, it's actually really fun.
And oh my days.
One of there was nine of us living in an apartment, in a three-bedroom apartment. And there's a little bit more room in my room than there was in Tiffany, who I was living with at the time. And so she was like packing her luggage to go on a trip to, I think it was Indonesia. And she sort of like knocked on the door, walked in, and started like packing her luggage. She's like, you all right up there? And I'm like, I just need a glass of water. So she brought me a glass of water. And as she was packing, she was singing We Like to Party by the Venga Boys.
We like to party.
And I was like laying in bed, the room was spinning, still drunk, and just like trying to dance while laying down. And yeah, no, it was a good time. So I don't know if Tiffany would remember this moment, but every time I hear the Venga Boys, We Like to Party, I think of my first hangover. Which we heard last night, eventually.
Yeah, it took him a long time to get to that. Jeez, I can't remember my first hangover. The first time I got so incredibly libated that the next day was a bit of a write-off was we went to go see the Toronto Pride Festival.
Oh!
In 2012, I think.
You know, I'm pretty sure Toronto Pride is a lot of people's first hangover.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, drinking through most of the night into early morning.
Mm-hmm.
The next day,
responsibly, of course.
Yes, and I think I was definitely dehydrated because it was so hot in the middle of the summer.
Oh yeah,
so it was like dehydration.
Toronto Pride, everybody smells like they're sweating out everything they put into their body.
Yeah.
Whether it's greasy food, alcohol, or wink-wink substances, like you can smell on everyone's skin what went in their mouth like 2 hours earlier. Not everything, actually. No, everything, yes, because there's those trees that bloom every year at Pride. You know, you're laughing because you know what I'm talking about. Yeah. There's these trees in Toronto that smell like cum.
Mm-hmm.
When they bloom. And incidentally, the first person to specifically put it into those words, do you know who it was? Like, she came to
David
Canada.
David Attenborough, the Queen.
Close. Queen Victoria.
Oh my days.
She came to Canada on a visit, and then she was like, what smells like cum? And everyone was just so alarmed that the queen would say that, and they're like, oh yeah, it does smell like cum, doesn't it? No, it's this tree that flowers, and the flowers smell like cum. And it's at Pride, and it blooms during Pride. It's just, it's hilarious. It's absolutely
Well, I
hilarious.
Mean, I think it blooms during July.
Well, yeah. It's not like a whole bunch of, like, homos coming together inspires it to open its blossoms, you know?
No, it's not.
It's a coincidence, but it's a hilarious one, yeah.
All right, and we're jumping to the song Blossom by Trey Sivan now, and I'm not doing that. I did want to pass on some good news that we discovered. The UK is really trying to get towards zero transmission rates for HIV.
Okay.
And globally, HIV is on the decline, which is excellent. And the introduction of PrEP, the pre-exposure prophylactics, has been a huge part of that.
Yeah.
You know, if you take, and also just getting people diagnosed and then taking the medication. If you're diagnosed and you take the medication, it becomes untransmittable, which means that, you know, the spread of HIV, you know, comes very much to a slow stop. They reckon of the estimated number of people in the UK with, that they, you know, that they guess would have HIV. There was, where did I leave it? There was a certain number of them. 93 of them have been diagnosed.
Okay.
So of the 100,000 plus that they think are there, they know that 93% of them have been diagnosed. And I mean, that's important because diagnosing is being aware of where you are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's important for containing the virus from infecting anybody else. So it's still 7% that isn't diagnosed. And those are the ones that, you know, are the worry. Because, of course, they don't know that they're infecting other people. In Canada, ignorance is not an excuse in the law. If you get someone, if you infect someone with HIV because you did not get tested and should reasonably ought to have known to get tested, then you're at fault. So that's important information for Canadians to know. But anyway, they reckon that the number of men having sex with men living undiagnosed has halved between 2014 and 2018. So a lot of men are actually going in and getting tested, which is fantastic. And the new infections among gay and bisexual men dropped by 71%, which is a huge drop. I think it was over 10 years. And, you know, that's fantastic. That means that there's less people transmitting it to others.
Fewer.
And more people, there are fewer. And there are more people who have been diagnosed and able to become untransmittable. So, you know, this is very hopeful. I think we might be seeing potentially the end of HIV infections.
I did come across a moderately related story about HIV recently that a bunch of biologists actually started looking into a peculiar question that people weren't sure how to ask and weren't sure what to do about it, where they noticed that if you look at South Asia, so India, Pakistan, Afghanistan, and you look at Africa, and you look at certain regions in South America, HIV is predominantly a heterosexual infection disease. And if you look at people of European and Asian descent, it's predominantly a homosexual disease. And they were curious as to why that was. And they started looking into it. And what they found was, well, first of all, we've discussed this on the show many, many times before, that HIV is actually really hard to catch. It's a very delicate virus. If it's too hot, too cold, exposed to air, exposed to anything, it just crystallizes and shatters.
If you look at it the long way.
Yeah. HIV is a numbers game. If you are exposed to risk enough times, it's just you're rolling a crapshoot.
I mean, you could be exposed to risk once. You're just, unfortunately, that's the time.
So they started doing genetic studies of these different populations to see what they had in common. And the answer they came up with was actually kind of alarming. One of the reasons why people of European and Asian descent are getting HIV at much lower rates is because of bubonic plague.
Oh.
And survivors of the plague developed a resistance to certain other kinds of viruses. So everywhere where the plague went, HIV rates are lower, and only people who are engaging in particularly risky behaviors are sensitive to it. Now, at this point in time, that's just kind of a, oh, that's interesting, kind of a piece of information. But knowing that, like, we know that genetically and structurally and how it actually works, that HIV and the plague are incredibly different.
Mm-hmm.
But knowing that a resistance to plague also gives you a resistance to HIV also makes them hopeful about the ability to discover new treatments in the future. So, I don't know, that was the bit that I found out recently. Really interesting biology. I'm into that kind of thing.
Well, wait, there's tons of other stories that came out. We're going to be trying to meet up with probably our good friend at the Canadian AIDS Society.
Good old Gary.
Yeah, Gary Lacasse.
I feel really bad for our audience because the best interviews with him are always like, the moment we turn the recorder off, he's like, okay, now we're going to really talk. And he tells us all sorts of things off the record. And we're like, damn you, we can't put this on the air. One time I even said to him, damn you, we can't put this on the air. And he laughed at me. He laughed at me and said, do you want another coffee? Like, it was, the guy's great.
Well, it reminds me of just this past week.
Mm-hmm.
I had a meeting with the personal assistant to the CEO of the Canadian Human Rights Museum.
Okay.
And we were talking about, you know, the Human Rights Museum, mm-hmm. the way it represents LGBT experiences, and we'll get to that in a few minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought that the Human Rights Museum was in possession of one particularly vile object.
That we both love to hate.
Which we very much love to hate. And
we disagree on one issue, but we agree.
What do we disagree on?
Well,
that it's hideous?
No, we agree on that. Okay, so first let's describe what the object is for people who don't know. So in protest of how on the internet people call things gay as a slur, like, you know, that shirt is gay, that show is gay, that song is gay, a local activist collected the hair, the human hair, from local LGBT folks, had somebody spin it into yarn, and had somebody else knit it into a sweater. Now, I think that is an object of art. Like, if you take this sweater and frame it and put it on the wall, I think it's an interesting message.
Hmm.
And that's the only thing we disagree on, because you think it's just disgusting altogether and needs to be burned in fire. And I'm like, as an object...
I wouldn't want that much hair.
As an object of art, I actually really appreciate it. But we definitely agree that no one should ever put it on their body. And several people...
And he kept insisting on people wearing it. And it was anyway, apparently, this particular activist had on multiple occasions asked the museum to carry it, and apparently they politely declined. And I can't say I blame them. It is a hideous piece.
I mean, I think the idea of having it framed and put on the wall and looked at as a think piece, I mm-hmm. think, is very meaningful. The fact that somebody wore that thing is kind of...
when I was in Winnipeg, I went to the Canadian Human Rights Museum.
Right.
Oh, yeah. My days. It nearly killed me. It is a heck of a walk because there's like lots of bridges that crisscross, and, you know, you start down in quite a dark tunnel, sort of, not Noam Chomsky, like the Aristotle's looking out of a tunnel idea. And then you go up into the first exhibit. And it's all about, you know, the history of human rights. And then there's an exhibit hall of, like, little micro, like, tiny square diomes.
Are you trying to say diorama?
Dioramas. That's it. Diodes, diagrams. I was going to get there. Maybe I would have got that. But these little dioramas of different things, like same-sex marriage, for example, actually right in the front of this art piece representing same-sex marriage in Canada, was a photo. They were all photos.
Okay.
And was a photo of the Vietnamese couple, and they were also the first Vietnamese couple to be married.
Oh.
So I happened to recognize them, because my partner's Vietnamese, and this couple, they live in Montreal, and they're very famous across Vietnam as the first gay couple married, and they were married in Canada.
Well, that we know of.
Well,
there may have been other ones who did it in secret and didn't want the attention.
Yeah, but they were married in Canada.
Okay.
So, yeah, it was that was interesting. But as you walk through, you know, that particular exhibit, which has everything from like missing and murdered Aboriginal women yeah. to the way that the Japanese were interned during the Second yeah. World War.
Did they have like the bread strike, the Winnipeg bread
yeah,
strike?
Okay, yeah, good, that yeah. was in there. So that was workers' rights.
Yeah.
And it was just this, you know, really interesting, very Canadian lens. And as you walk through the rest of the museum, it's, you know, we're talking about the Holocaust mm. and various genocides. It is a kind of depressing museum to walk through.
Yeah, a huge portion of the population of Canada are descended from people who are trying to get away from something. Like the yeah. Irish came here because of a famine, and then a lot of the Yugoslavian and Ukrainian descended Canadians came here to avoid... Name a war, Ukrainians were probably a victim, and then they fled. So
yeah, I like that. Just name a war.
Name a war. It probably I mean, had nothing Boer to do war, with them.
Maybe not so much, but that's...
You know, I am willing to bet the Boer War still somehow managed to displace Ukrainians, especially Ukrainian Jews. It could have been like the war between, like, you know, China and Laos, mm. and Ukrainian Jews still would have been somehow screwed over. Like, it was...
Yeah. Not that we're making light of...
No, it's a weird portion of history where, like, just... Oh...
Anyway, so as you go through the whole museum,
yeah.
there's a little bit here or there. You know, this is how people with disabilities were treated in the Holocaust.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is how people with disabilities were treated in the like the Rohingya massacre in Myanmar, okay. Burma. You know, and it's all about, so it's more about, there isn't just like an LGBT hall or an LGBT room.
Yeah.
It is a thread that's drawn through all of the whole museum.
So it's more chronological.
Well, no, it's also like a bit thematic. So there's an exhibit on the evolution of human rights law, for example. So
oh.
some of the court cases around gay marriage would have okay. been important there. And I don't know, I just thought it was really interesting how they had done it. They hadn't... you know, effectively ghettoized the different types of human rights.
Human rights is the one space where I am deeply sympathetic to libertarianism. I think libertarianism has sort of a weird approach to how to run a country. But, like, they were the ones who were the first to speak out against capital punishment. You know, that the state should not have the right to choose who lives and who dies. And in some ways that kind of started the legal battle for human rights. And then they start doing weird... plans. I think there should be a libertarian at every table. I just don't think they should run the show. But yeah, no, I'm willing to bet there's a lot in there on France.
I mean, I think there was a bit. I mean, it is a huge, beautiful museum, and I think everyone should go and see it. They are working on an exhibit around the Purge.
Oh, and we'll get to the Lavender Scare.
And we'll get to that in just a few moments.
Also known as the Fruit Machine.
We're jumping to our first song, yeah. which is by Joey.
Yes, Canadian classic from the Toronto area. The man had one good song. It, by his own admission, he had one good song, and he made an entire album just so that he could sell that one good song. And this was it, and it's about how his best friend died
when
he was in high school. It's kind of sad, but I mean, the guy had a good song in him. It's Canadian. Mostly we decided to play 90s music that's better than the drosh we listened to last night.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is Joey Angel, and we'll be back just after this. When you left, you took a part of me. I just wanna let you know, this was your time. You went away, it seemed the days all faded tonight. You'll be alright, I know it. Cause now I've got an angel watching me. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Cannes Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is still Luke Smith.
I am still Sebastian.
Did I tell you that they've closed the last Chick-fil-A in the UK?
Yeah, you did before the show when we were discussing what we were going to talk about. So, I mean, yes, but I think I'm supposed to pretend and say, no, tell me more. What is this news story you speak of?
So, I mean, it was kind of interesting. We talked before about when they were going to open it up in the mall. In London somewhere.
They have malls in London?
Some.
It's all promenades.
It's not all promenades, but there's some.
I mean, I don't like malls. I prefer promenades. And the weather there isn't that
cycling,
bad.
Circling back. And anyway, so in order to promote this mall, they wanted to bring in a different restaurant and this well-established chain of Chick-fil-A, which in the United States is, I think, you know, one, we're definitely in the top three or four franchise chains. Yeah, so we're talking like Burger King's, McDonald's.
And unlike KFC, they didn't run out of chicken.
No.
If you remember that scandal. What was that, 2017 or something like that? KFC, all KFCs in England ran out of chicken. And it almost caused a riot. Like, it was pretty bad. But yeah, so yeah, they brought in Chick-fil-A.
Yeah, and it was there for a week. If you remember, and then it promptly got ousted.
Right.
Because I think the mall realized that the backlash wasn't worth, it's just not worth it. And I think that was really it. It's, you know, Chick-fil-A makes good sandwiches. I haven't tried one personally, but, you know, they are successful, so they must be good.
Well, I mean, by that argument, Taco Bell is amazing.
So, I say this because Chick-fil-A, you know, they're just making food, selling food.
Yeah.
But their CEOs continue to fund very discriminatory and right-wing
bodies. We talked about this before. The fact that it's a Christian organization that funds pro-family, not-for-profit organizations. Mm-hmm. I actually, if you were to just tell me that, I would say, that sounds amazing. And then you find out how they're defining pro-family, and then it's like, oh dear.
Yeah, and so, who's left out of that? And
yeah.
I mean, the details on where the money goes, and then saying, oh, no, actually, we're not going to do that. We're going to stop donating it. And then the right-wing's, you know, voice in the States complains, and then they can just continue doing it anyways. Just,
yeah.
You know, if you want to buy chicken, there's a lot of other places to buy chicken.
Yeah.
So anyway, I bring this up because
especially in Quebec.
There was only one Chick-fil-A left, and it was inside a luxury hotel in the Scottish Highlands.
Oh!
But apparently this hotel was constantly picketed and constantly protested because of their Chick-fil-A. And this hotel has presumably given Chick-fil-A the boot. And now there is no more Chick-fil-A's in the UK. The British public was like, no thanks, you can go home, go back to America.
That's so much effort.
Yeah, I mean, the British public are very keen on kicking people out these days, so it's a whole thing.
Or kicking themselves out.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, Chick-fil-A no longer in Britain. There were protests in the Toronto
still or again
store. Well, the protests have been there for sort of on and off going for a while. I think my understanding is the store is still there and will continue to be there for the time being. But yeah, they get constantly protested as well.
The fact that it's a 2-minute walk from the village, it's so bizarre. They couldn't do it on Queen Street West or the beaches or by Hyde Park, or there's so many parts of Toronto that are quite far apart, but no, they put it like a couple blocks away from, like, in my mind, it's like those protesters must have so much free time, but if it's in the village, yes. I mean, you don't even need free time. You can just, you know, on your way home, pop on over for, you know, a little 20-minute protest and keep going on your way. Like, it is nothing, absolutely nothing when it's located near the village. Arguably within the village, depending on where you draw the line. It's so bizarre. It's so bizarre to me that they would locate it there. Not that that justifies anything. It's just they're not allowed to be surprised if they are still being protested.
So,
like, if they were up by the airport and people had to travel across town to protest, and it was still going on a year and a half later, and they were surprised by that, I'd say...
You need to look at your practices.
Yeah.
Why are they protesting? I want to talk about Olivia Nwama,
okay.
who was the executive director of Toronto Pride.
Mm-hmm.
We have not been fans of Olivia Nwama. I think that's a fair statement to say. The very personal rant using corporate social media accounts.
Yeah, and it wasn't so much that we ever disliked her. It was just that she was not the person for the job.
Yeah, it was the leadership and decisions making.
She's probably a fine person. Just every time we read anything about her in her position, the two of us were like, that's not what a leader do. So, yeah. But anyway, tell us about Olivia Nwama. What's up?
Yeah, so there was a special members general meeting.
Okay.
A special meeting of the membership.
Okay, it was a meeting for special members or a special meeting for all members?
A sort of an exemplary meeting.
Okay.
Outside of an annual general meeting and any other general meeting.
So not a regular meeting, not a general meeting.
It's a special general meeting. Yeah. Anyway, so there was at this meeting, the details of what happened in that meeting... not being very clear. We haven't been able to get...
It's always foggy what's behind those doors.
There's a lot of secrecy there. But she was at the special general meeting, and then on the 21st, so I believe the next day, the Pride Toronto issued this statement. This message is to inform you that as of Wednesday, January 15th, Olivia Nwama is no longer the executive director of Pride Toronto. We would like to thank her for her years of service to Pride. We will be releasing a proposed timeline to search for the new executive director soon. This timeline will include multiple opportunities and mechanisms for the membership and the communities we serve to provide input and authentic engagement into what skills, experience, priorities, and passion should be. So,
can you do me a favor?
Yes.
When you're editing this episode, at this point, or at least when you finished reading that letter, can you cut in the sound from the dramatic woodchuck thing? You know, the...
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. Like the spinning around. Yeah. Can you put that in there?
Maybe.
Okay.
I mean, this is like her dismissal was one sentence on a social media post.
Yeah.
Like, she had done many things. So the board was not in favor of the police being in the Pride committee.
Yeah.
Parade. The membership was, broadly speaking, not in favor of it.
Yeah.
And then she just went, she'd had secret meetings with the police and then made that decision unilaterally.
Yeah.
And in fact, her decision was then overruled by a motion of the membership.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly, I think that...
And this is something we discussed earlier, you and I, that the idea of proper procedure, because like things in Toronto are complicated. If somebody were, say, the police have done bad... They've not apologized properly. They're not indicating that they're dedicated to improving things. They should not be there. Both of us were like, yeah, that makes sense. And if somebody were to say the police must be there because we need to engage in bridge building and, you know, that there's been a drop in reporting to the police and we need to increase trust between the community and the police and they must be there. Both of us, again, we're like, yeah, there's a good argument for that too. The issue here is you don't decide on behalf of everyone else without justifying yourself, going beyond the rules of your role. Just everything about it has, it's so pedantic, but it really does come down to procedure. Was not doing it in a fair way that represented the community.
Mm-hmm. There was rumors around their handling of grants as well.
Oh, yes.
You know, just really weird decisions, such as securing that massive grant to survey...
All of Canada?
Yeah. Just weird decisions.
Yeah.
So the next day, or within a couple of days, Pride Toronto issued a second statement.
Okay.
The plot thickens.
Ooh.
And it is the most... It was drafted by 12 lawyers. Like it's like a whole page that says nothing. It is complete.
Sounds like normal. Like also, when you said the plot thickens, can you put the dramatic
dun, dun, dun.
Can you put that in there as well?
Okay. I'll only read a little bit. As a community organization, we strive to be transparent, accountable, and operate under the best practices in the service of our communities. Therefore, the current board of directors would like to share an update regarding some of the work we have been doing. The current board was formed in blah, 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 blah. in late June and early July of this year, concerns were raised by volunteers, staff and board members with regard to verbal harassment and potential misuse of funds.
Ooh.
Dun, dun, dun.
Indeed.
We immediately took these allegations of harassment and misuse of funds very seriously. We sought expert advice on the best practices, blah, 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 blah. They hired a third-party investigator, blah, 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 blah. The potential misfunds relate to the board expenditures before 2019. And they've introduced various policies, and now they release all of their expenses publicly.
That's Shouldn't just they have been doing that since, like, the 80s?
I know, it does seem a bit, yeah. And then it's just more of the, it's important, we should be better. Okay, thanks. Mm. Like, it's just, I mean, someone raises more questions than they answers.
Hmm.
In my opinion.
Okay, yeah.
So it sounds to me like, you know, special general meeting, and then the executive director gets the boot, and the next day the board's issuing a mea culpa. So all kind, I mean, but would I ever expect any less drama from Toronto Pride?
No.
I mean, it seems to be the bedrock of Pride-related drama is Toronto Pride.
Well, I mean, in terms of boardroom, if you look at Montreal, it looks like Montreal Pride is a fairly cohesive group that believes in teamwork and getting things done. But then the controversy is that the community disagrees with them as to what is a good plan and what is a bad plan. But yeah, if you're looking for controversy, then yeah, Toronto is doing a pretty good job.
So for those in Toronto who maybe want to get a better idea of what is going on, and we'll be hopefully sending someone to cover this, the Pride's Toronto's general meeting, the annual general meeting, which is for all of the members, go to the website, find out how to sign up, is on Wednesday, January 29th at 6:30 p.m. For the rest of the country who aren't in Toronto, this is kind of a big deal because they are the biggest Pride parade in the country. They work with, represent so many LGBT folks in the most populous city in the country.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they are, it's unfortunately, you know, I don't want to admit that sometimes Toronto is important, but I think in this regard,
well, yes,
you know, it is. So we'll be keeping an eye on that as the story develops. You found it, didn't you?
Sorry. Sorry, I thought I was on mute.
Do you. So a little while ago, somebody had put a op-ed into the paper, one of the commercial chains of papers, and essentially said, you know, has this government given up on the gays? That really was the core question. You know, there was an LGBT secretariat, the independent LGBT liaison, who was former MP Randy Boissonneau.
I mean, I'm more skeptical than that, because the question that I've been asking is, did they ever actually care, or was it just a bunch of optics and wank? And
well, I mean, they did do a number of significant things.
They did a few things, but they also did a few things that if they didn't do, they would have been violating their own charter. So
yeah, I mean, it's tough in the way, because the Prime Minister did apologize for the purge.
Yeah.
But the purge victims had sued the government into oblivion.
Yeah.
And there were many things that were part of the settlement agreement, including
a formal apology.
Sure if an apology is one of them, but creating a fund to repay the victims, which also does things like education.
Yeah.
You know, and it is related, this fund is what's related to the Canadian Museum of Human Rights creating their traveling exhibit on the purge.
Mm-hmm.
That's being funded through this purge fund that the government of Canada had to pay as part of its settlement. And also, the National Capital Commission has announced that there will be a monument built, a national monument memorializing the discrimination against the LGBTQ community. And that's also being funded by the LGBT Purge Fund.
Mm.
And these were funds themselves were created because the government had to do it. So right. Was it really government largesse, or was it actually
Supreme Court?
Yeah.
Like should we, I've been saying this for a while.
How much was it, you know, doing it from the good of the heart, and how much was it necessity?
Like, we need to stop thanking the Liberal Party and start thanking the Supreme Court for, because they've been kind of on our side a little bit more ever since the 90s. There's been a lot of things where the, you know, people would take things to the court and say, like, why is this legal? But that's not legal. That's not fair. And then some judge goes, oh, yeah, that's a good point. I'll talk to my colleagues and we'll draft something up. And then a law changes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, not to understate the fact that, you know, for whatever reason, the Liberal Party has done things, you know, whether they were, you know, coerced or compelled or whatever, or whether they did it out of the bigness of their heart, it did happen on their shift. And that is something worthy of acknowledging. Mm-hmm. But something inside me is still like, yeah, but how much of that is optics and wank? And how much of that is the Supreme Court who we really should be thanking?
So there's the Department of Canadian Heritage is going to be leading the National Monument.
Okay.
Which came out of this fund. The fund is like $15 million, I think. And this monument is going to cost them about $8 million. It's going to be an $8 million monument. It's going to be right downtown Ottawa, or sort of in the area where lots of...
They better put a placard on that thing.
The reason, I mean, hashtag no placards, don't get me started. But I think it's kind of good that, you know, this joins, you know, with the monument to the effects of communism. You know, opened up recently, and that was a whole ton of drama.
And for those who haven't been to Ottawa, Parliament Hill is covered in green space. And I know some of it is designed to be left an open mall, mm-hmm. but like behind the government buildings, there's a ton of green space. There's plenty of space to put up a statue or a plinth or something. Mm-hmm. So having it on or near government doesn't register as being a bad idea to me.
You know, and also this monument is because of the purge, and it was the actions of the government that caused that.
Yeah.
You know, it was a government-sponsored atrocity, essentially.
Yeah, absolutely.
And having it right there. They expect it to be finished by 2024. Mm-hmm. That Purge exhibition I mentioned earlier, they're hoping to roll out in 2023.
Okay.
So I'm kind of excited for this new monument. But we have a bit of a wait as of yet.
It'll probably be delayed. The doors won't open properly.
Yeah, it just misaligned. But I bring it up earlier.
That happened again, the O train. A bunch of people got stuck on it for half an hour because the doors wouldn't open.
Oh, my days.
Oh.
So I mentioned earlier that somebody had written this op-ed being like, has the Liberals forgotten about the gays?
Mm.
And there's all this other stuff happening. You know, we've got a monument. They're planning on doing a bunch of stuff.
Mm.
And anyway, so the Minister for Diversity, Inclusion and Youth,
okay,
which is Bharatish Chaka, then wrote another op-ed and sent it into the Post Media papers.
Okay.
And it is just a government-issued press release. It is incredibly, you know, cut-and-paste platform updates, you know, from the election.
Yeah, yeah.
But what's interesting is that it brings in and refocuses where the government is planning on working next. So, for example, the Immigration, Refugee and Citizenship Minister, Marco Mendicino, is looking at getting a steady stream, supported stream to support LGBT refugees. And that's a great thing. That's one we didn't really know of too much before. But they are looking at trying to do things like finally ending the blood ban, which they said they would do at the start of the last term. And they're now looking at banning conversion therapy, which they said they wouldn't do. And now they have decided that they will do it.
No, first it was we leave it up to the provinces.
Yeah, it's not our problem. It's the provinces.
Yeah, it's the provinces. And no, originally it was that's the colleges. So the College of Practitioners, I can't remember which college, it was like, no, it's the college. And then somebody said, like, what? What are you talking about? This is a human rights thing. All right, fair enough. I guess someone in the state should do it. All right, we'll pass it off onto the provinces. And the provinces were like, it's a human rights issue.
Yeah.
That's federal level.
I think the Liberals...
Grow a spine and do your dang job. This is why.
The Liberals got a lot of backlash from initially passing the buck on it. And I think that backlash pressure is why they did a U-turn and put it on their agenda for this year.
This is why, and this has been a running gag I've been having for a couple of weeks now. And it started off a joke, and I think I might be selling myself my own Kool-Aid. Do you know who I want for Prime Minister?
The Kool-Aid Man?
Gordon Ramsay.
Gordon Ramsay. I don't think...
Gordon Ramsay for Prime Minister.
British famous chef Gordon Ramsay is going to be...
Here's the thing. Under the original Westminster model, the original model, the Prime Minister is not the president. They are the minister of making sure the government works. Their portfolio...
The Minister of Ministers.
The Minister of Ministers. And if all you need to do is grab somebody and say there's tainted water and you're the Minister of Environment, do your dang job, they don't need to be an expert. They just need to be an expert at getting other experts to do their job. Gordon Ramsay for Prime Minister.
Gordon Ramsay. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, whilst we think about that, this is Biff Naked Spaceman.
Yep.
And we'll be back just after this.
Spaceman, oh spaceman, come rescue me.
Home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
My name is Sebastian.
And We have one last big story to cover.
Is it a big story?
Well, it's kind of. We've been following it for a long time.
It's a medium large.
Yeah.
It's a venti.
It's definitely a grande on the story size. So we've been covering Hamilton a lot. Mm-hmm. One of our most dedicated listeners is from Hamilton.
Oh, yes.
Your mum.
Yeah, my mum.
Hi. And yeah, so it's during the Pride debacle in Hamilton.
Yes.
And the police responses to it.
Mm-hmm.
The chief, Eric Gert, went on an interview with Bill Kelly of CHML-FM.
Okay.
And made less than pleasant remarks about the gay community.
Mm-hmm.
Things that sort of very much conflated and implied that we were just lawless, sex-craven hooligans. Which, you know, sometimes we are.
Yeah, I was going to say that that's not false, but that's not the kind of thing a
chief of police should be implying.
Yeah, not on record anyway.
Yeah. He apologized. He realized that his remarks were offensive to the community and had been attempting to illustrate the point about legislative change. However, one of the people, Michael DeMone of Hamilton, was not impressed and actually reported Chief Gert to the Office of the Independent Police Review Director.
Right.
That the directorate has now reviewed the director Silvana Capogreco.
And to be clear, this is a body of
a completely independent body.
Yeah.
I think it's a body enacted by ACT.
Yeah.
So it's one of those quangos.
And it's all civilians, and they always have exactly and no more than one former police officer.
Well,
for context.
It's not just what they often employ from folks who've retired from police services.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're civilians, but they have many of them have been police in the past.
Mm.
Anyway, and essentially they've said they've dismissed the complaints. They did acknowledge that the effects of his comments on the community, you know, they were recognized, or, you know, there were certainly real impacts from these comments from the chief. How they said, however, it is unlikely, given the context in which they were made, that the comments would constitute misconduct. So the actual comments the chief made in isolation wasn't really enough to constitute misconduct. So the complaint was dismissed. So this is kind of a bit of an update on where things were. There is a third-party review into how the Hamilton police responded to the violence during the parade.
Yeah.
And that review is ongoing.
And I remember at the time, the one conclusion that basically everybody came to was that everybody did the wrongest thing.
Mm-hmm.
That, I mean, the police are meant to be the adults in the room who mm-hmm. do the wrongest thing the least. So it's kind of more disappointing that a systemically organized institution failed as opposed to a loosey-goosey group of activists who ostensibly have leadership, but we know activists, they don't listen to leadership. So it's one of those sides has more responsibility than the other just mm-hmm. because they're better prepared for responsibility. So,
well, yeah.
Yeah.
You take, it's a, you know, they have a duty of care to the public. And I think that's, you know, it's important that everyone is aware of.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. I mean, it's interesting. You know, the his comments and the effect they had and this independent review was slightly conflated as one issue. And I do agree with the complainant when he says, you know, this is, by lumping them together, we're not dealing with each of them individually as, you know, as they should.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that. I think that the independent review into the police actions should also be considering the public comments made by the police regarding it.
Mm-hmm.
So sort of how the police framed their actions to the public. And that was part of what he was doing. So I think that as long as that's covered, it'll be interesting. I mean, it's good to see that there's accountability. And I think even though this complaint was dismissed, I think it does still sort of those slow moving wheels of justice have moved.
Oh, yes.
Albeit slowly. Yeah. What are your thoughts on how this affects Hamilton now?
Are you asking me or the audience?
You.
I mean, we should also ask the audience.
If
you have any comments, you feel free to contact us
at talkandqueer or info@queer.news. Yeah,
on Twitter, and we don't have a Facebook.
Yes, we do.
Do we?
Yeah.
I'm never on there.
I discovered we have the LinkedIn yesterday.
We have a LinkedIn?
Apparently we do. We should keep an eye on that.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So anyone messaged us on there, we're sorry for the delay.
Yeah. So my number one thing is that the chief should be held to a higher standard.
Mm-hmm.
Every chief of every force in Canada has a media team behind them to advise them on what to do. And every so often, you'll see the media team go out and speak on behalf of the police. Because the thing is that the chief of police used to be a patrol constable
mm-hmm.
who, through by one means or another, worked their way up. It's like having, you know, the CEO of your plumbing goods company used to be a plumber.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not to disparage them. I mean, the chiefs of police across Canada have a certain kind of insight that you would want. You wouldn't want them to not understand what it's like on the ground. But they come from a certain background, and that background is not media relations. It is not a communications background. It is not a policy and politics background.
I mean, it may.
It may.
They may have done, you know.
But chiefs have a long-standing history of, like, let's call them B-minus comments to the public, where you're like, ooh, I know what you're trying to say there, but you could have phrased that differently. Like, mm-hmm. It's usually when a chief of police is saying something, like, back of my brain, I'm always like, this used to be a patrol constable who politics their way to the top.
Yeah.
Don't take it personally when they don't phrase things as you would want a politician to.
Well, we'll be continuing to keep an eye on how this independent review in Hamilton unfolds. Mm-hmm. We'll be keeping an eye out for that General Assembly meeting for Toronto Pride and how they go about hiring a new executive director, and we'll be keeping an eye on a lot of other things.
Will we be monitoring the current location of the hair sweater?
We will be maintaining vigilance on the hair sweater. I don't really want to look at it personally, so maybe you can be the one monitoring.
We are the vanguard protecting Canada against the hair sweater.
It is an awful piece of... Oh. Anyway, I have been Luke Smith.
I have been Sebastian. And we should introduce the last song.
It's the Bucketheads.
Buckethead with Da Bomb, which it's just a track, but historically it's actually relevant. It's the first time somebody took a disco piece and re-edited it into a house classic, and that just sort of launched the 2000s, basically. I'm Sebastian, and thanks for listening.